Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. What a long decade it's been, March. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have, from a socially acceptable distance away, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning, Kelly.
Glad to have you with me. And also with me from, again, an acceptable distance away, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good afternoon.
Glad to have you with me. Now, John, I actually want to start with you. You wrote an article for a couple of reasons. Number one, because it's a good tip to be giving people. And number two, because it's kind of shenanigan-y that you have to bother doing this in the first place.
Yeah. I've been spending a lot of time in Messages app on my Mac. Mm-hmm. Lately, because of some administrative work that I've been doing on the side, and I got some text messages from some CBD supplier that I didn't want to get anymore, and so I thought I'll just go block it. And it turns out there's no way to easily block an unwanted text message in Messages app on your Mac. What you have to do is follow Apple's tutorial on going to Messages and Preferences and then clicking iMessage. And in the block pane, you can do an add button and you can enter the message or address you want to block. Mm-hmm. The problem is, of course, that they must already be in your contacts list if you want to add them to the blocked list. And so yeah. The requirement on the Mac side that you actually add a contact that you didn't want to listen to.
Yeah, let me save this phone number forever so that I can ignore it forever. That totally makes sense. What are you,
it's
Windows?
It's quite easier. Apple, man, it's the mistake in a coy kind of way. Not a mistake, but just a failing. This is on your iOS or iPadOS device. Block messages without creating a new contact. Mm-hmm. See the Apple support article, and then it shows you how to do it on the phone. So it's really easier to drop what you're doing on the Mac and go over to your phone and block that sender. So feeling this has something to do with the way the Messages app interacts with the phone, mm-hmm. and its ability to link to AT&T or your carrier.
Yeah. Let's be clear, though. If you do go block it on your phone, it doesn't make it to your Mac, right? So if you had gone and blocked this sender on your phone, then those messages would stop coming through on your computer, right? On your Mac.
I believe that's true. I believe that would stop them cold.
Okay. So if you are doing this on your phone, or if you're using a service that Andrew and I have talked about on numerous shows, where you can better manage the perpetrators of of calls, whether or not they're robocalls or sales calls or whatever, using one of those, like, we've definitely gone through a wide variety of those services. And if you're using some of those and making sure that they're not making it to your phone, then hopefully they're not making it to your Mac as well.
There's a valuable link in my article to another Apple tech note called Block Phone Numbers, Contacts, and Emails on Your Phone, iPad, or iPod Touch.
That's lovely.
That's a nice article. It covers all the bases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad I think they added this in iOS 13, adding blocking emails to that list, because I don't think you could do that before.
I don't think you could either. So I'm glad to see that that's happening. Until we have Andrew back on the show to report on better use of some of those filtering things or FTC or FCC, depending who's responsible for them, crackdowns on some of this stuff, and you still need to wade through some of those junk messages. If you need to do some of that, then John has a breakdown for you, which is pretty great. So thank you for that, John. It is irritating that you have to go through that kind of gyration in order to make it work, but I'm glad it's at least any kind of possibility, so that feels a little bit better.
You can do just about anything you want to do in software, provided you have the hardware facility. And I don't understand how this could have escaped Apple's attention. One crackpot theory I have is that the Messages app is waiting to be catalyzed in the next version of macOS. And so why bother to jump through hoops modifying code that's going to be thrown out in the next version of macOS?
It's the only theory I have.
It makes perfect sense. It's probably perfectly wrong, but it makes perfect sense.
That's really interesting, though, because here's why. Because Charlotte and I recently talked about how the Messages experience is a terrible experience. And how it's not great, and how the bulk of her communication happens in other messaging style apps because the iMessage experience is awful. And so I would really like if maybe that's what's happening, is that it's in the process of catalyzation. That's how that's said, right? And if it wasn't a word before, it is now. And that way maybe... maybe there is some hope on the horizon that it'll stop being speech balloons and stop taking up so much unnecessary space on my screen. That would be really, really great.
Another complaint that users have about Messages on the app is that there's no send key. Mm-hmm. So you can't hit return to create a new line.
Yeah.
If you hit return, a message gets sent to where it is on the iOS. You can hit return and skip a line or whatever and space it out and create new lines. And when you're all ready, you click send. How can this happen on the Mac? Why? I mean, that's just pure software.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely had many things to say about where Messages could be improved. So I really like your theory because I want it to be true very, very much. That's really what's happening. As we all sit home and air quote attend WWDC this year, I really like the idea that one of the things that they're going to show off to us is what the new and improved Messages looks like, because that would be great. The other thing that we want to talk about today is, Andrew, you had written up an article that gets more important all the time, really, about using apps that are a little more private on your iOS devices.
Yeah, I wrote this a while ago. I don't remember what sparked it, but there was all this hubbub in the news about how, because Apple doesn't encrypt your iCloud backup and, with end-to-end encryption, that means if they get served a warrant, they can provide that backup to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, maybe it would be a good idea to write an article about some alternatives to Apple services. I mean, I still believe that Apple is private, but if you don't want any chance of them being able to hand your data over to the FBI or whoever, then maybe consider using some of these services. So the first one, I think we've talked about this before. Charlotte and I use it. So instead of iCloud Mail, you can use Proton Mail. And let me just back up a little. Like all of these, except for I think two, are all open source. And that's a good thing when it comes to privacy. So Proton Mail is pretty good. They're based in Switzerland, I think.
Okay.
They were created by scientists at CERN, which is cool.
Nice.
Back in 2013. Yeah. Let's see.
Cool.
So, the next one, instead of Apple Notes, there's a service I found called Standard Notes. And they have a tool, well, not their tool, but there are some tools out there to let you export your Apple Notes into like Markdown or plain text notes. And then Standard Notes has this tool on their website that converts it into a format that they can read. And so you can like pretty easily import your apps, or I mean your notes in another app, and then use it that way.
Very nice. Interesting. And this is just like, I remember part of the issue being that if you're using iCloud backup, that only parts of it are actually encrypted. And also what was and wasn't backed up at the time. So there's definitely some things to consider as you look at some of this stuff. And it's not to say that one is necessarily a better decision than the other. It's more that you should be aware of this. So if there is something that you're doing that you want to make sure is private, or you just have a stance that you have a certain amount of privacy to which you are entitled because Apple continues to tell you that privacy is a human right, then these are the kind of things that you can do to sort of ensure that stuff. It's really not about shame on Apple for doing this or anything like that, as much as it is be aware that not all of this stuff is necessarily covered.
And I want to add some color to this too before you continue. The thing that gives me pause, I think these are great apps and I encourage people to investigate them, but what gives me pause a little bit is that somebody who's an expert has to actually look at the source code to make sure that nothing been done, somebody with an expert eye. And two, I try to use Apple apps because they're long-standing and durable. I hate having to dump into a email program and then discover they've been bought out by Amazon or somebody. And then I'm committed to using a product that wasn't properly maintained, didn't have a long, you know, durable future, and makes me squish back again to Apple stuff. So those are the couple things I keep in mind when I explore apps like this.
One thing that I think sort of is going to always be the case when it comes to the stock apps that come with iOS or macOS is that they're going to be integrated into other stuff far more. And until Apple actually allows for me on my phone to set my default browser to something else or my default mail client to something else, anytime you tap on email, it's going to open the mail app as opposed to whatever it is that you want to use instead. So I think that's a certain piece of it, is that, at least for me, there are times when I'm not seeing a clear advantage by using something else. Like, it doesn't have dramatically more features or anything. And trading, maybe there's a couple things about it that I like. For if I just use the one that Apple gave me, it works everywhere and it's fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a consideration.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did like what you said, Kelly, about, you know, this isn't really anything against Apple. And this article isn't really meant as a criticism of Apple. These are just some alternatives. And I was actually thinking about this yesterday morning, just kind of in a little debate with myself. This certainly isn't true with all companies, but with some companies, I think they can really only be private as much as their shareholders allow them to be, as long as their privacy doesn't greatly impact their profits.
Interesting. So, this is true.
Yeah. And so, you know, I really do believe that privacy is part of Apple's culture now, and they really do strongly believe in it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, using services like these with end-to-end encryption is kind of like a hedge against the future. Like, how long will Apple be private? What if they have another CEO that will kind of step back on that stance a little bit? So you can, you know, with open source and end-to-end encryption, you can use these and maybe, like, trust them a little bit more. Like I said, it's just or you don't have to trust them, because as long as the features and the technology is robust, then you can use that service.
And which is also important, like, to John's point, you know, you do have to be a little bit of a business analyst almost. You know, is this company doing something that will allow them to make money? Right. So this is where, Andrew, you and I have talked about VPNs on the show more than once. And if somebody's offering you a free VPN, like, what are they getting back for that? Because it costs money to offer that kind of service. So what do they get in exchange if they're not getting your money? So, you know, do, like John said, you know, be a, not necessarily skeptical, but be a little bit more aware. And, you know, if somebody's offering you something that they say is an encrypted mail service, you know what, if they're doing a bunch of that kind of work for you, like, are you paying for that? Is it free? Are they getting money from some other source? Is it like a company whose main thing is this and they have this side project of, hey, our email service is secure, things like that? Like, you kind of have to consider, you know, and we talk about this with all kinds of services. You know, I have it with smart home stuff all the time. Like, you know, this cool new startup company is doing something really neat with a doorbell or a security camera or, you know, light bulbs or whatever. And like, are they going to be around in 10 years when I want to, you know, upgrade these? Or, you know, am I going to have to switch to some other completely different system because they go out of business and I have to be subscribed to their cloud servers and they're shutting their servers off? What do I do? You know, that kind of stuff. So this is always a thing that you kind of have to consider. Like, there's a very good chance Apple's going to be around in another 10 years, right? But like you said, Andrew, will their stance be the same? Which is another thing to kind of think about. Like, not to get super meta here on the morning news podcast, but there is a certain amount of that has to happen and should be happening, like with anything that you download and install or, you know, agree to the terms of service for or whatever. And I know generally we tend to be careful about those. I know both of you are a little bit more thoughtful about some apps. I think, Andrew, you'd install almost any camera app, really, but otherwise otherwise you're a little pickier. John, I know you have pretty high standards for what you'll let onto your hardware, right?
Yeah, I don't just go out and download stuff without knowing more about it. I look for a review. I look for community discussion. I look for longevity. I look for, you know, articles about the app that give me confidence in it. An app might have to be out there for, you know, a long, long time before I have the confidence to download it, because just about any app these days has some sort of nasty aspect to it. And the more attractive and the more appealing it looks, probably the more downside there is to the back door.
Yeah. And that's a lot of times, you know, as things go around a lot, that's one of the things that I definitely wait on. So, you know, you see all of a sudden everybody's using whatever that app is. I'm like, no, there's something up. I don't know what it is, but there's something going on there. And almost always that answer is correct. It's disappointing, but it's usually correct. You know, that's not fun. So
no.
If you want to hear about the rest of Andrew's apps, you can check out his article over at MacObserver.com. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. Excuse me. If you want us to know about other apps you think we should be taking a look at that have really solid privacy stances, or if there's other things that you want to make sure that we're talking about here on the show, you can always get us at observations@MacObserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. So with that, we're going to call it for today. I want to thank both of you for being here, even though you're over there. Andrew, thanks so much for coming by today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And John, as always, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow, March 32nd. And until then, be excellent to each other.